You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J. TCRG.
Okay.
All right. Today on the podcast, we have Una Harrigan, which you might know on Instagram as at WMHX0, which stands for World Medal Holder Times Zero, which is the most clever name. I love it. So welcome, Una. Could you give us a little dance history on yourself and, you know, how you got to this moment now?
Of course I can. So I actually have been dancing since I was six, but not really. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily count that because I was kind of just in a, it was like a recreational, like after school type of thing. So, you know, just hopping around off time to the music. I didn't realize that competition even existed until I was 10. So I did my first bash when I was 10. I placed in nothing. And then I basically became obsessed with it. And so I competed until I finished high school. Then I went to college, and I went to Boston College, so I was on Boston College Irish Dance, which I loved. It was so fun. It was a lot of performing. That's where I first, like, got involved in choreography. And then, I don't know, this whole account kind of just started as, I don't know, just me posting stuff for fun. And then I just found I really enjoyed it. I made friends through it. And yeah, it's just freely post what I want now.
I love it. It's such a beautiful chaos of like dance videos and memes. I am so impressed with like the speed at which you create memes and things. And I think a lot of people really like treasure the content that you make because it's this corner of the internet that we all can come together and acknowledge and laugh at, like some of the really ridiculous parts of Irish dancing that we all know are there.
Yeah.
And also come together and relate to the shared experiences that we all have being in this weird little world.
Yeah. So one thing that one point I really like to get across is how much of the experience is shared, because I think a lot of the Irish dance content that's available, there is very much a focus only on, you know, people who have the globes.
Yes, the stars, if you will.
Yes. And there is a narrative that it has been in, well, the whole time I competed and still going on, this whole just like, oh, if you just work harder and don't give up, then you'll win. And that's just not the reality for a majority of people. I think there is a tendency to just kind of gloss over the more negative stuff and just be like, oh, I had a bad fesh, but then I believed in myself and I didn't give up and I listened to my teacher and then I won worlds 50 times.
Yeah. And that's like the storybook version, I think, of what people like hope will happen or wish would happen. But you're very correct in that, you know, a lot of us, it's very normal. Like it's a sport where you are evaluated based on a semi-subjective criteria. It's not a sport where everyone gets a trophy and everybody wins. Like there are real, you know, winners and losers, to use a really like terrible term, but like, it's true that a lot of people are going to lose a lot more than they win. And to be completely like real with everyone, there are way more people that are zero time world medal holders than there are world medal holders.
Absolutely. And I think that, so when I was competing, you know, social media was just kind of starting to blow up. Well, I mean, my main social media was Facebook, which it doesn't have, now there's like Instagram, there's like TikTok. It's just much more available everywhere. And, you know, especially now with Fesh TV, which is great.
I love Fesh TV.
I'm obsessed with Fesh TV, but also there is the whole, like, you know, people screen recording the top dancers posting them on Instagram.
Yep.
And then your Instagram feed is just all it is top dancers. It's only world champions. You don't even, it's like the other dancers don't even exist. And it's such a warped sense of reality because you're like, oh my God, everyone is amazing. I'm a loser. And I know that if I competed with this stuff available now, I would have just, yeah, I would have, but I mean, I'm going to be completely honest. I would have hated myself. I mean, and I did.
Well, and that's what I love about your account too, is that you are very real and very vulnerable and very honest in a way that, you know, you say you kind of bring to light some of that negativity or negative feeling that a lot of people have that experience of, but you do it in such a way that it doesn't feel negative. It's just kind of acknowledging those feelings that everyone has had.
Oh yeah. And the thing that I think is really interesting is, so back when I competed, I was very, very shy. Looking back now, I'm like, I see why I didn't really have friends. I probably, from other people's perception, I probably came off as pretty standoffish. I was just in my own little world, just aloof, just so anxious, so focused on myself. I was so worried that other people wouldn't like me that I kind of self-isolated. So I had no idea that there were other people out there like me. And I think through what I learned on this account and just through my conversations with so many people, I've realized that a lot of these experiences are shared, and the level you are at is so irrelevant. People who do win the Globes experience these same feelings. People who are in the grades experience these same feelings. It's just because it's, and I've seen that with myself, you know, when I was just trying to make the recall at Aractus, I was like, oh, it would be so nice if I would just be at that level where I wouldn't have to worry about recalling. And then, you know, then the standard just increases when you're like at the level where you're, you know, you're aiming to get a world qualification, you're not so much worried about recalling.
I relate to that, but so then, hard.
But then it's like, you know, first it's, oh, if I don't recall, I'm a loser. Then it's, if I don't world qualify, I'm a loser. Then it's, if I don't make the podium, I'm a loser. And, you know, I never recalled at Worlds. But I think you can kind of see it when I share with Aractus, because I've been on both ends of the Aractus thing. Like, I've not recalled. I've also been on the podium. And I think the thing that was very mind-blowing to me was that, you know, I kind of, because I was so insecure, I mean, a lot of teenagers are, and I was kind of looking for Irish dance results and ability to fix me, so to speak. I was very insecure because I was kind of a social outcast. I was very, like I said, I was so shy. So because of that, I didn't really have friends. I mean, I had people I was friendly with, but I had like one close friend in Irish dance who, she's still one of my best friends to this day, but I had one friend. So I looked at Irish dance to just kind of, I was like, okay, if I was just good enough at dance, I wouldn't feel terrible about this. And then there I was on the podium, like, a couple years ago. I never could have imagined that would even happen. And I still, like, left the venue on Sunday feeling like a loser and like everyone hates me because I messed up an eight hand. I still went home, was up until 3 a.m. that Sunday night writing college essays because I didn't even want to think about college. I pushed that off until the very last minute. I was like, Aractus is what's important. So I was furiously writing college essays, applications. They were, you know, unedited, probably poorly written. Honestly, I don't know how I even got into college with those essays written in a 3 a.m. post Aractus state and not even edited. No one else. I was so like, I didn't let anyone else read them because I was like, these are so bad. So I just submitted them. I'm like, okay, hopefully my grades are good enough that they don't look at these and immediately reject me.
Well, but, hey, yeah, I mean, you probably, at least knowing what you post now, you probably had a really compelling narrative and voice that honestly in that 3 a.m. post Rakta's rage fest might have made for a pretty good essay.
You know, you're not wrong there, because if I'm going to be honest, some people ask me how I post so much, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't put any thought into this. I don't plan this. A lot of the content is 2 a.m. spur of the moment. Oh, I should go to bed. I have work tomorrow. Wait, no. I need to Photoshop Gordon Ramsay doing a birdie and yelling at people. You know, these are like 2 a.m. ideas. And then I'm like,
but it comes from the heart.
Yeah. And, you know, these ideas just come to me at the most random times. You know, I'd say certain situations tend to inspire me, you know, in the car, at the gym. And I have like this ridiculous notes app with just a list of ideas, because there is no way I can create things as fast as the ideas, and I don't want them to escape me. So I just have a list.
I love it. I mean, you're super creative.
Yeah, and that's the fun of, you know, being retired from competition. I can finally enjoy the creative side of it.
Yeah, with like no rules, no restrictions. It honestly sounds amazing.
No rules. I can do whatever I want. I am not a TC. I don't run a business. I don't make any money off of this. So that's what is so freeing. It's just people, there have been some people who told me, they're like, you're so brave for posting what you do. I'm like, I'm like, what?
Like, well, it's nice to be in that place where you do feel like you truly have nothing to lose. So it's
I have nothing to lose. Like, I just spew whatever nonsense comes to mind. And, you know, some of my posts, you know, people, I guess they have more of a reach and I'll see them shared everywhere. Some of them just kind of sit there. Not that many people like them. I don't really care. You know, I enjoy making them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know I've been sent your memes before. I've sent your memes to other people before. Like, I love it. I watch all the crazy choreography videos. I love choreography videos. And also, you are still at an incredible level of dancing.
Well, that's because you only see 8 bars.
Hey, that's all right.
I don't think you want to see me doing a full hornpipe. I don't want to do a full hornpipe.
Yeah, who would? Yeah.
But no, and I think that's another thing that I think, to your point on that, that, you know, when I retired, that was something I was very afraid of. I had this fear that I would just lose all my ability. And the thing is, you really don't lose your technical ability.
That is drilled in there deep.
It is so ingrained in muscle memory. You don't lose your skill. What you do lose is, you know, stamina, mm-hmm. some strength that's specific to dance. And honestly, I think some of my, you know, now I don't dance as a workout. I go to the gym. And when I retired from competing, you know, that was finally my chance to kind of explore other forms of fitness. You know, unlike when I was dancing, I can actually do more than half a push-up.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I had the whole, like, Irish dancer
upper
like
body.
T-Rex, yeah. T-Rex thing going on, you know, overly strong leg muscles and noodle arms. So I think some of my just general fitness stuff I do has complemented dance in a way that I wouldn't have known back in the day. Because, oh my God, and it's a good thing. There are so many more like physical therapists now who, you know, call out the nonsense, you know, just, so, yeah, when I competed, I was afraid of strength training, honestly, because I thought it would make me too big or whatever, so now I actually do strength training. I think that contributes to some of why I have maintained, you know, my ability to do jumps and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's really encouraging for, you know, anyone who's either reaching the end of their competitive career or is trying to figure out like where they fit into the dance world next, like that you can be socially connected, you can be, you know, involved in the way that you want to be involved. And there's not, you don't have to be afraid of it, because I think a lot of people feel that this is something you've dedicated a lot of time to over the years. You know, you've put all this time and energy and effort and money into this sport, and like eventually it's going to come to an end, at least competitively. And not everybody wants to be a TC or go touring shows or, you know, teach, but like you can still be part of it and it can still bring you joy and it can still bring other people joy. And it doesn't have to come to this abrupt and like sudden final end. Like it doesn't have to die.
Yeah, exactly. And that is something that I really like to try to, you know, get that point across. Because even with me, you do not even know how often people ask me, they're like, you're still so good. You could do so good in competition. Why don't you go back? And I'm like, I could write a long novel explaining why I don't want to, but my simple answer is I don't want to.
Yeah, and that's a complete sentence.
Yeah, I don't want to. And I think there is such an idea that, and you know what, the other thing is that I like to get across is there are so many reasons why people choose to compete. And it all comes down to one thing, that it in some way it is valuable and rewarding to you. And for each person, that might be a very different reason. For some people, they don't really care about, you know, how good they are. They just like getting up on stage and performing. And, you know, they should be free to do that. People shouldn't be shoving, you know, hyper-competitiveness down their throats. They should just be allowed to get up there and perform if they want to. On the other end, there are people who are very serious, very competitive. And, you know, if they don't have the capacity to put in the level of training that would be satisfying for them, then they shouldn't be, you know, pressured to get up on stage just, you know, because they love dance so much. And that was the category I fell into. I did try to make a few comebacks after retirement, and I was miserable. I hated it. I will not sugarcoat that. It was demoralizing, humiliating, just awful. And, you know, I think the thing I like to say is, you know, some people will say, but it can't be humiliating, you're so good. I'm like, how I'm able to dance is irrelevant. The point is that I did not have the capacity in me to put in the level of training that would be satisfying to me. What I loved about competing was putting my everything into it, was the drilling, the really going for it, and knowing that what I was putting out on stage was my best work.
Me too.
Yes. And if I get up on stage knowing that what I am presenting is not my best work, I don't want to be there. And when I did try to make a comeback once, it was, oh my God, it was so awful.
Was this during college or after college?
Yes, it was in college. I was taking my final exams freshman year. I had not competed for a year. And, you know, you could say I was still dancing, but okay, performance dancing is so different. Especially college performance dancing. It was just for fun. Like, yeah. I was not doing stamina or drills or full warm pipes. So anyway, I'm a first year of college, taking final exams, very sleep deprived, stressed out state, just running purely on coffee and caffeinated chocolate. So my mom texts me, and it is a photo of a reservation for a hotel for nationals.
Oh boy.
I'm like, is this a joke? And she's like, no. I'm like, I do not want to think about this right now. I have an exam. I have multiple exams. I was taking like calculus and, you know, I was stressed. So I come home and I just don't have the time. Like, you can't get back. If you've been out for a year, you can't get back into peak competition shape in 6 weeks.
It's dangerous even.
It's not realistic. And I'm like, I don't want to get out on stage because I know this is just not, I'm not at my best. And I'm saying if I was given, you know, I think I would have been able to make a comeback if I was given sufficient time to, you know, gradually work my way back up to the level I was and then to continue to get better, not to just like show up poorly prepared. You know, it was a month to nationals. I didn't even know my steps yet. I was a mess.
Now, who was the one driving the comeback? Was it you? Was it your parents? Was it your teachers? Or it was just kind of like a, oh, I thought this was going to be a good idea and I could do it. But then putting it into practice, it just was not.
Oh, so it was, no one was pressuring me. It was more just like, I was such a insecure teenager, such a people pleaser. I didn't know that just saying no was an option. I really didn't.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't even occur to me. You know, if my dance teachers reached out to me asking, oh, do you want to come back? I would say yes, even though I didn't want to, because I'm like, oh, I can't say no. That's rude. I didn't process that as an option.
Yep.
So I'm like, so then I tried to comfort myself by being like, oh, well, okay, I'm just going to dance for the love. That was so fake.
Yeah.
Like, it was so fake. Like, I was just, the amount of mental gymnastics I had to do to try to convince myself that it was more just like, I felt like I was trapped in a situation. Right. So it's like, you know, positive thinking or whatever. If something out of your control happens, you try to make the best of it. But that was completely in my control. At any time, I could have just said, no, I don't want to do this. But I didn't realize that. I thought it was like, okay, I saw it the same way I would see, like, I don't know, school, like, oh, I have a really hard exam. This really sucks, but I'm going to try to make it less miserable by, I don't know, taking short breaks throughout the day to see my friends, making sure I have enough coffee so I am awake. But I didn't, this was not an exam for school. This was completely voluntary. I just didn't realize that. So I was like, so that's why there's some, I suppose, inconsistencies. If you scrolled, like, all the way back, I don't know, if you found my Facebook and scrolled back to, like, 2015 or something, you might find me posting some happy things about how I'm so happy to be back. No, that's just a bunch of nonsense. That was just me
trying to convince yourself.
It was me trying to make the best of something that I believed I couldn't control, which, I mean, that's not a bad way to go about things, but, you know, if I was totally in control of the situation, I just didn't know it.
Yeah, no, I think this is really important for some dancers to hear, because we tell our dancers that are kind of reaching that point where they're considering, you know, should I retire? Am I at peace with where I'm at? Should I keep going? And my belief is firmly, like, you know when you're done. Like, you can feel it intuitively. You can feel it in your gut of like, I'm at peace. I'm good. I'm not being forced out, whether it's by injury or I know some people's teachers effectively retire them, which feels bad. You know,
oh my God. Yeah. I've heard that from dancers, and it's so bad. You know, I think the other thing about having the platform I do is that dancers, you know, I am so happy that I guess I can be a safe, non-affiliated person.
Yeah,
for people to get out their stresses, because I don't have, I'm not involved in the situation, so I can hear this from a more objective standpoint. But I hear so many, this is very common, actually. You know, they're dance teachers, but they don't, it's very similar to, you know, you hear about this in the workplace. Someone's boss will suddenly give them a set of impossible tasks and overwork them, make them so miserable because they don't want to fire them, but they want to make their life so miserable that they quit. The same thing happens with dance. People's teachers are, you know, either withdrawing attention or just being outright rude, just out of the blue. And it's like, I see what's happening here. They are intentionally making your experience miserable, hoping that you will just retire.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It really is.
So hopefully anyone out there listening knows that that isn't okay. It's not it shouldn't be normal.
No, and that, not at all.
You know, if you no longer get joy out of competing, you don't have to compete. You can pursue dance in other avenues. I'm really curious about your Boston College Irish Dance experience. My mom's actually a Boston College alum, way before, I'm sure, they had an Irish dance team, and it would have been something she would have known about anyway. But I know a lot of people find a lot of joy and fulfillment in just being part of the Irish Dance Club, or having people that, you know, have gone through that shared experience and, you know, can relate to it together in a brand new place. That college transition can be really hard. And I'm happy to see the growth of college Irish dance, you know, in the little what do they call it? The intercollegiate Irish dance championship have now. I think that's really cool for the people that want that.
Yes. So actually, the reason, one of the biggest factors as to why I chose Boston College was because a couple of people who were from my dance school went there and continued to compete. They practiced with a local school when they were at Boston, and they were still able to compete and do well. I didn't so much care about the dancing team. I just wanted to keep competing.
Yep.
Which is crazy to think, because then I just stopped. But the college dance team was so valuable, because I think this is another thing that's glossed over. You don't hear about the people whose life is just a complete mess and they're trying to figure out, like, who they even are or what they're even doing when they no longer have competitive dance. You just hear about these, like, I won my globe and I'm ready to head off to the next big journey in life. I have my dream job. I'm off to school to pursue my lifelong dream career, and all is perfect. That's so not realistic for so many people.
Yes.
I mean, if at like 18, you are fully satisfied with your career and you have a life dream to pursue, you know, I'm thoroughly impressed, because that was not me, and that's not a lot of people. But you don't hear about that. You don't hear about the person who's like, they don't retire because they're ready. They retire because they burn out and they just can't do it anymore. That was me. They retire because they're just so frustrated and they just cannot pull themselves together to do it. They're trying to figure out their life. They are going to college and they're a mess. I was a total mess when I went to college.
I think a lot of people are, you know, especially depending on how far away you are from home, or like how different your surroundings are, even, you know, the smaller factors, like if you and your roommate get along, or if the classes that you picked, you're actually enjoying, or, I mean, think about how many people change majors. Like, it's such a huge adjustment.
Oh yeah. I mean, I changed my major. So college was, and you know, I think it's like you hear about these it's time for retirement. I'm so excited to go to college. And then you see all the happy pictures. Like, I love college. I've made my lifelong besties in the first week of school. That was not me. And that's not a lot of people. I was a mess. Like I said, I was super shy. I did not have a social life when I was in high school. I never went to like homecoming. I never went to prom. No one asked me because I didn't talk to anyone. So I didn't have a social life, and that was something that was so terrifying. And I think if you place all your value in dance, then when you leave dance, you know, you still feel like you have no value. You just place it into another thing. For me, it was the, I guess the best way to put it would be the obsessive pursuit of being quote unquote normal, which was having a social life, going out to parties and drinking a lot and going to parties and having friends. And, you know, all I cared about was trying to be normal. And I always felt like what was very weird going to college was, you know, naturally everyone is trying to figure themselves out. They're trying to make friends, right? So people are friendly. And I think people were nice to me because they were new college students and they were just trying to make friends. I couldn't really comprehend that. I always would be like, oh, they're going to figure me out. They're going to realize who I am. And then they're going to be, I'd always just have it in my head, like, why is this person talking to me? Do they not realize that I'm a loser? Like, why are they talking to me? And I would just tense up, right? Because I'd be like, this person, they cannot be genuinely interested in getting to know me. They must have been like dared to talk to the weird girl and report back to their friends what weird things she says. Like, this was what was going on in my head when people were just, you know, just genuinely being friendly to me, because I was so isolated, right? When you're a competitive dancer and all you care about is competition, you don't really have like, and I did, like, go to school, but I, you know, I ate lunch in the library. I was just very, very reserved, very shy, and so college was a rough adjustment because it took years for me to get that out of my head, that the idea that people were just only being nice to me because I was, like, the pity friend, or that I was just this thing they wanted to collect information on so they could mock later. It took years for me to understand the concept that sometimes people are nice to me because they actually like me. And, you know, if in dance, a lot of people sacrifice social experiences for dance all the time.
I did too.
Yeah. So it is so normal for kids in dance to, you know, I guess be on the shy, the socially awkward side. But you don't really hear about that, you know. The competitive Irish dancer who had no social life, never really had a solid group of friends, goes off to college and tries to, when they're surrounded by thousands of their peers suddenly, and they can't just escape back home to their parents' house with the cats. That's a difficult adjustment. It was for me. And given how prevalent the, you know, sacrificing social lives for dance is, it's way more common than people would think.
Yeah, I used to have terrible social anxiety that I also didn't really resolve until college. So we do have quite a lot of overlap in like our stories that I didn't even realize until we, you know, hit record here.
Yeah.
Now, one of, I think, your most important messages on your account is that dancers have to try to separate themselves and their self-worth from their dancing and their results. And I think this is so important. And again, one of those shared experiences where people feel like if they don't meet their goal or if they don't get the result that they're hoping for, that there's something internally wrong with them, or they have failed and they have like made a grave error in their life, and it's just not true. So now that you're not only an adult, but a retired dancer, you've been able to zoom out, you've been able to look back. What are some of the things that you wish you knew as a younger dancer to help you realize that you and your dancing are two completely separate things?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's a really good one. So separating yourself as a person from yourself as a dancer is so important, because I think when you see all these overly simplified, I think that one thing I like to use in my content is sharing that there is a lot of tendency towards inspiration, which I'm going to quote it and say it's not real inspiration because it did not inspire me. A lot of the inspirational content I saw when I competed made me feel like a loser because it's so hyper simplified. It's like, believe in yourself, never give up, and you'll achieve all your dreams. Or just work harder. And, you know, that is so oversimplified. It does not apply to a lot of people. Because I like to put some reality into it. Because the inspirational stuff is great, but it needs to have some reality in there, right? You know, you see these videos of people celebrating their wins, the happy tears of, I just achieved my lifelong dream. And that's great, but, and you know, not to tear down that, because it's great to see people achieve like something they've always worked for. But the thing is, that is just a few minutes of someone's life.
Very important reminder.
That person who you just saw win a globe, you know, they're going to go home and go to school on Monday and have to do their math homework, you know, but you don't really see that. It's like, you know, that doesn't change who they are as a person. They're still a person who has to go about their day-to-day life. That's just the highlight of their life. And also, I think what is very important is there is this just, and it's not, you know, explicitly stated. I think it's more implied, right? But that you win the title and then your life is amazing. But that's not true. And also, the other thing is that kind of attitude hurts everyone. You know, I am not shy about my hatred for the, how would you call it? Like the celebrity worship type culture of idolization. Irish fans. Idolizing children. It's creepy.
You're not wrong.
Fan pages for 12-year-olds. That's weird. So I think the thing is that type of behavior hurts everyone. It hurts the dancers who see these people being worshipped. And they're like, I'm a nobody, I'm a loser. Because that's how I would feel at Worlds. You know, I'd go to Worlds, no one would know who I am. Because I was just a middle-of-the-pack dancer who may or may not recall, depending on the day. And I thought that meant I was a loser. You know, no one was coming up to me asking for pictures or watching me and talking about how I danced on the message boards, because no one cared. No one knew who I was. I was just another filler dancer. But it hurts the top dancers too. Because
if
you think
of even higher level of pressure, and like, you know, Irish dancing is a extremely small niche hobby sport, you know,
it is.
There's no big money at stake. There's no big TV moments. Like, idolizing, you know, successful dancers puts more pressure on them than they need. It is creepy, like you said.
Yes.
I completely agree that it does. It hurts everyone involved, and I wish I had a better way to fix it other than don't do it.
Yeah, so the way it hurts the top dancers, right, is it does isolate them, because people no longer see them as a real person. They're like, they feel, and I will say it openly, I wish the Voi forums would get shut down. But the way people talk about these children, I've seen it on kids as young as 6. They talk about them like they're not even people. They are just vessels for performing a hornpipe. And it's like, you think just because this kid has won some titles that you can say whatever you want about them. You think that you're the way people act entitled to information about people's personal lives is really creepy. Like, it's natural to be curious, right?
Yeah.
But why are you publicly posting that anonymously? It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, and you touched on it before that, you know, there's this belief that, oh, well, you know, if you meet all your goals and if you win the globe and all this stuff, then like your life must be great. It must be perfect. But without, you know, outing or naming dancers, like, I have plenty of anecdotal advice or like anecdotal evidence that that is not true. There are, you know, world champions that will tell you openly that they have their own struggles because, like you said, they're normal human beings that happen to be exceptional at Irish dance.
Yes, and I think that's a thing to realize. Also, I think it's this, and like I said, you know, because of my account, I've gotten to know multiple top dancers, right? Talking to them is no different than talking to anyone else. They're just people.
Yeah.
I mean, if I competed against them and I had to do a hornpipe right now, they'd beat me with straight 100s because they're good dancers, way better than I am. But that's so irrelevant. You know, people who win world titles, they still get stressed about that upcoming exam. They still have to clean up litter boxes. If they have cats.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that there's a lot of overlap between Irish dancing and cat people.
Okay.
That's something I noticed. Lots of people here.
You
love
need a
cats.
Pie graph for that.
I do. I should run a poll. But yeah, they're just people, and I think it's, you know, people also feel like they can say whatever, like they will tear people apart. And I believe that too. I literally used to like go on Instagram and scroll through top dancers' pages. Totally normal behavior, I know. I would go through their Instagrams, just scroll all the way back, look at the pictures, and be like, it's so weird. I'd just be like, I wish I could just switch lives with this person. I don't want to be me. I want to be you, because, and I wasn't under the impression that top dancers have perfect lives. I was under the impression that no matter what difficult life challenge came their way, they would always just have that thing in the back of their mind, like, oh, I have a globe. I want a globe. So this doesn't bother me so much, because at least I have a globe. Which, you know, a globe is not an invincibility. It's not, like, an invincibility thing. It doesn't protect you from ever experiencing unpleasant or sad things or difficult things in your life.
I think that's it is about dance so far.
Yeah, it doesn't make you invincible. You know, it's an incredible accomplishment. And I never want anything I say to be perceived as taking anything away from dancers who have won Globes. And I hope nothing I say ever comes off as that. But what I'm saying is people who do win Globes, they still experience normal human emotions just like anyone else. That winning that Globe is a very happy moment in their life. But that's all you see.
And it is
plastered all over social media. It's just a moment that you see it plastered all over social media. But they go back and they experience normal life. And I would argue it could even be harder for them to when they struggle. Because there is a whole lot of, oh, shut up. You're so good. What are you complaining about? You know, because they experience stresses in dance, you know, they have frustrations at practice, they get stressed out with dance, they experience pressures from, you know, maybe from their dance teachers or maybe from their parents.
And definitely from themselves.
Yeah, and it's like when they don't have anyone to confide in because people are just like, oh, shut up. So many people wish they were you. I experienced that type of treatment. And that was just on being a world qualifier. I can't imagine what it's like if you've won a Globe and you try to express something you're frustrated about with dance and everyone's just shutting you down. Like, oh, shut up. So many people wish they were you. I had that with me. People were like, oh, so many people are just hoping to recall at nationals, and you're complaining that you feel like a loser because you can't recall at Worlds. But, you know, they experience stress too. One common experience, injuries.
Yep.
Dancers of all levels have experienced injuries. And you know what? No matter how good your baseline level of dancing is, if you're out of dance for like a month, 2 months, when you come back, you're not going to be at your best. Now, if your not your best might look amazing to other people, but you feel it.
Absolutely.
You can feel
and
when
I think
you're
that's
not at your
what's
best.
What's important to remember is that everyone is on their own journey. Everyone's on their own path. And although we have a shared experience, everyone's experience is still going to be their own. And
exactly,
you know, we were talking about how winning a Globe is a moment, but we all know how much work it takes to even appear on the world stage, the national stage, the Erocta stage, whatever stage. We all know through our shared experience how much hard work goes into those moments, whether or not you meet your goals or experience what you deem success. And what I will say is, I do know that through competing, being part of this crazy world, all of us have gained experiences and skills in life, whether it's resilience, whether it's just even knowing what it truly means to work hard at something. Mm-hmm. And do you find that to be true about your own experience of, you know, like, what are the most valuable skills you feel like you've learned from being part of this?
Oh, well, I think it would be, like you said, the hard work. But I would also like to say that's another thing I see oversimplified a lot. Because I really like to get the point across that I should make a chart of some sort on that, of all the things that go into a certain placement, because there's such an oversimplified, like, hard work equals win, so then you come to the natural conclusion that if you didn't win, you didn't work hard enough.
And that's not true. And
no, because, you know, you might work very hard, and you might work your hardest ever, and there literally was nothing else you could do,
I also like to remind people that, you know, yes, you're working hard and like you might have that dancer in class who is doing everything right, but you're also going to be in a competition where everyone's working hard, or most of them are. So just because you did the work and didn't get the result, that didn't mean you did anything wrong.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I personally am not a fan of the shamey type motivational stuff that's like, remember, someone's working harder than you. It's like, okay, cool. That has nothing to do with you. And I don't like that whole, oh, more is better. Because
more
it's not
true.
More
is definitely not always better.
Because some people will think, like, oh, I need to work harder, so I'm just going to do more full dances. And it's just running through your dances sloppily while completely exhausted is not getting you anywhere. Sure, you can say you practiced for more hours, but that just made you more exhausted, accomplished nothing, and probably will lead to injury.
And maybe demoralize you too.
Yes! Yeah, so, you know, I think it's very important for dancers to focus on themselves. One thing that dance did give me was the ability to, I guess, put myself in uncomfortable situations. You know, the pressure of getting out on stage and performing, it's not all that different than, you know, going out and taking an exam or doing a job interview. And then that feeling when you get off stage, knowing you did your best. You know, it's the same kind of experience as, you know, doing a presentation for school and knowing I gave it my all. So I think that was something I did learn from dance is, you know, the reward of seeing things that, you know, this is uncomfortable, this is nerve-wracking, but it is a valuable experience. It is rewarding. It will get me somewhere.
Those are really good. Yeah, I like those. To change gears a little bit, I find your statistics that you've been doing, thanks to Fesh TV, really, really interesting and helpful as, you know, a teacher who has to put together steps and choreography. And, you know, you can watch kind of on the surface, seeing what you think is trending or, you know, what different patterns and, you know, costumes and all the things that you see. But seeing your pie graphs and spreadsheets of the like cold, hard facts, I think is amazing, but I can't imagine how much work goes into documenting that. Can you share a little bit of like the behind the scenes process of making those?
Oh yeah. So honestly, sometimes I come up with an idea and then I'm halfway through and I'm like, why did I say I was going to do this? This is so time consuming. But like I said, I have a job, you know, Excel spreadsheets. It is, so a lot of the stuff I do on that is pretty passive. I will just stream a day of Fesh TV all day while I'm doing work. And might I add, upbeat Anton and Sully reels, excellent for focus at work.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, so I just kind of stream it in the background as I'm working, and then I selectively pay attention, you know, when I have something I want to capture. So basically it's just during my work day in the background while I'm doing work, I'm also running these stats.
Amazing. One of my favorite ones was when you counted the number of trebles in people's lead arounds. And
oh, that was hard.
I can't imagine. Sometimes the groups are dancing like three at a time. So did you have to go back and watch each
group of dancers one dancer at a time?
Yeah.
And that's why I only did lead arounds. Like I had some people request, they're like, oh, why don't you do the middle and last step? And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I do not have the patience to watch, like completely watch with full attention every single dance. Also, when you're watching for statistical content, you know, you can't really just watch and enjoy the dancer.
Right.
So that's something too. It's like, sometimes I just want to, I pay for the Fesh TV because I really enjoy watching the dancing. Sometimes I just want to sit back and watch dancing and not count how many trebles they're doing. So I like to keep it to the lead arounds. But oh my God, that was by far the most challenging one I had to do because, you know, sometimes the, you know, these moves all flow into each other and it's like debatable. It's like, was that a treble? And because there's like three on stage, two or three on stage at a time, sometimes you can't distinguish. You're like, was that a treble or was that just a tip? I can't really tell because, you know, it's not a set. I can't hear it.
Yep.
So there was some guesswork going into that. Generally, I only counted it as a treble if I was like, okay, without question, that is a treble. If it was debatable, I didn't count it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it might not be completely accurate. You know, like I said, sometimes I do have people like question me and I'm like, this is not a peer reviewed scientific journal article. This is just,
yeah, just for fun.
Like, don't interrogate me on this, please.
Yeah.
You get a general idea.
Yeah. And that's what I find really fascinating is like, there were less trebles than I was expecting when that, data came out.
Yes. And the reason is that, and this allowed me to observe, it's like there were less trebles because I've noticed there have been a lot of non-treble, you know, I think it's easy to think like, oh wait, no trebles, that means no rhythm, but there's a lot of non-treble rhythm.
Yep.
There's tips, there's heels, there's drums, a lot of drums, clicks. None of those are trebles, but they're all rhythm. Also, lead arounds, you
move
know,
a lot,
focus
yeah.
tends to be on moving, and you know, you can't really move in treble at the, I mean, you can, but trebles tend to be stationary.
No, I really love it. If you have the, you know, fortitude to do it, I like seeing it. So,
yeah,
keep up the amazing work.
I generally do. I think it was the All Scotland and Great Britain's back to back. That was a lot. I'm like, okay, I need a break. But I do intend on definitely for Worlds and All Ireland's.
Amazing.
I love Worlds. Maybe Mid Atlantic or Octos because that's my home region, and I don't think I'm going this year.
Now,
but.
What keeps you connected to Irish dancing at this point in your life?
Oh, my account and the people.
Like yeah,
I said,
I hear the people
I have,
a lot.
I've made friendships through my account. I've made friendships with current dancers, you know, seniors. By that, I mean people in their 20s who are senior citizens of Irish dance. People competing in the seniors, people competing in the adults, dance teachers, and then a lot of retired dancers. And it's the people, you know, what I think is so incredible about Irish dance is the ability to make friendship. You know, people always say it's hard to make friends as an adult. I disagree with that. I have more friends as an adult than I ever did as a kid. Because if you think of it, when you're a high school student, I don't know, I can't say this is true for every high school, but mine was very cliquey. It was like you'd have your established friend group and there was no straying from that. Irish dance is not like that. You can continue to make friends into adulthood. And you can make friends beyond those who just live in your immediate area. I've made friends from all over the world. Good and bad comes with that. The bad is you rarely get to see them in real life. But, you know, there's always Instagram and there's always texting. And, you know, I have some people that I, you know, keep in contact with almost daily just to talk about Irish dance or other non-Irish dance related nonsense. But, you know, it's great. And just like that's why I go to these competitions. You know, I'm going to the Western region or Octas because I have some very good friends I've made through the account and then met at Worlds and Nationals in real life. And then I'm like, oh, of course I'm going to the Western region because I get to see you in real life.
Yeah, I relate to that in the sense that my Irish dance friends have always been my core friendship group. You know, I had my school friends in high school that really served as a function of like a social group to eat lunch with, or, you know, have someone to, you know, be with during the day. But my true deep friendships were always my Irish dance friends. And that group has shifted and changed, and I've added to the group, you know, other people have moved on and we're not as close anymore or whatever it is. But there is something about the people in the Irish dance world that keeps me going now as someone who makes their livelihood in it, that like, okay, yes, there are good people in this world. There are good people here. You know, Irish dance is in a little bit of a dark time, and not everyone and everything about it is bad. And there are some really cool people. I also think it's great that you, as a retired dancer, feel like the Irish dance community, you know, wants and needs you to be part of it. Because I think that's another fear that people have when they retire, is like, oh, but like, can I still be involved and around? And I don't know how common that feeling is, but I've definitely
it's very common.
Worry about it before. And of course you can come. Like, of course, you know, we want you around. You know, this is a sport that doesn't have a lot of casual spectators. It's not like we sell tickets to the Oroctas and people
show
up to come watch. Like, of course the Irish dance community wants and needs you there supporting people.
Yeah. And that was something that was very difficult for me at first. And I think I've realized over this. So like the first time I really went to a competition since having my account was Mid-Atlantic Oroctas last year. And, you know, there I got to, you know, meet up with people that I had only ever met on Instagram. And, you know, there is always that little bit of fear, like, oh, I are these people really my friends? I've never met them in real life. But no, when I go to competitions, I meet up with people that I only know from online. They are exactly just as fun as they are talking through text or Instagram message. And I think that's so special, is just the, you know, meeting people from different parts of the country and different parts of the world who have this shared crazy experience. And then even, you know, as you get to know people better, you know, it does expand into like real friendships, you know, that go beyond just talking about Irish dance.
Absolutely.
And actually, you know, getting to know the person, you know, in their day-to-day non-Irish dance life. I think that's really incredible. I've made so many friends. And I think it's important to have both, you know, your Irish dance life and your non-Irish dance life. You know, I have a lot of Irish dance friends, but, you know, then I have very, very close friends from college who have no involvement in Irish dance whatsoever. I have friends from work that have no involvement with Irish dance. I mean, my boyfriend thought I was a tap dancer for a while. No one in my family Irish dances, you know, it's a balance.
Yep. I love it. And this episode is going to air in the midst of Oroctas season, but if, you know, you didn't get a chance to see Una at the Western Region Oroctas, she will be giving out a limited number of sad globes, a highly coveted item at, which Oroctas are you going to be at this Thanksgiving weekend?
I am unsure if I'm going to Mid-Atlantic. I might stop by for a day. I might not. Depends on how tired I am after Western Region.
Yeah.
But I will be at Southern Region the whole weekend.
Awesome. So people are really going to look forward to seeing you.
Come get your sad globes.
Yes. Now give us the backstory behind the sad globes if people have no idea what we're talking about.
Ooh, so there actually is bit of a longer backstory behind these. So I would credit my dad for the initial thought process behind the sad globe, because my dad was a very funny person who joked about literally anything. He kind of had this idea that, you know, if something bad happens, you make a joke of it to get through it. So basically, he was on dialysis, you know, kidney failure, but he made these, so people who are on dialysis have to limit their phosphorus intake. It's very dangerous, but he decided, he just randomly told me, he's like, oh, my doctor keeps yelling at me about phosphorus. I should get a t-shirt made with phosphorus and then a sad face on it. And I'm like, that is the funniest thing ever. I'm getting these made immediately. So then he went to dialysis, right? He has this green shirt that just says phosphorus and then a huge sad face on it. And everyone thought it was so funny. So I think it's very funny. I still have that shirt. I got one for me too. We actually got two versions of them made, but with the two different spellings, the American and then the English spelling. So there are two variations, but I still have that shirt. And I think that is where the thought of putting sad faces on things first came into my mind. And then I just, you know, I love looking at Irish dance dresses. I can look at them all day.
And you make some amazing creations, Photoshop creations. Yeah.
So as we were, I was just looking at that and I was just thinking like, it was late at night. It was just a random thought that popped in my head because Worlds was coming at him like, okay, what if I got a dress and I put sad globes on it because I never recalled at Worlds. And I just posted that to my story. It was just like a random, you know, thought off the top of my head and people loved it. That was like probably the most interaction I've gotten on a story. Like people thought it was so funny. So I'm like, I have to make this come to be. I have to create this thing. So then I Photoshopped me at Worlds in a sad globe dress. And then when I was like, okay, I'm going to Oroctos. What if I got sad globes made in real life? And at first, you're not gonna, I mean, this is so crazy. I thought I could show up at Oroctos with only 5 sad globes. They were gone so quickly. And then I'm like, okay, next one I need 10. At Nationals, I brought 20. And they were gone. 3 of them were gone at the airport.
Yeah. I kind of love it, though. It's like a little collector's item or like,
yeah. And it's very funny. And I always say, like, sad globes are for everyone.
It's true.
People who have won a globe are not, you know, they're not off limits for you because I'd say they're very versatile. You can come up with them for a variety of experiences if you're like me and you never recalled. That makes sense. What if you never world qualified? Sad globe works for you.
Yeah.
If you did win a globe, you have to give it back. So what if when the dancers return their globe, they get a sad globe because they no longer have globe? Also, to win a globe, you think of all the hard work that goes into winning a globe. You have to do things that make you very sad. Who wants to do stamina work?
Yeah.
So sad globes are for everyone. And, you know, globes on dresses, honestly, I think it's awesome. I think it's cool. If you won, I know they can be a bit controversial. If you've won a globe, that's an accomplishment, okay? You can put all the globes you want on your dress. I don't care. I am here for it. But the sad globes are still funny. And I think that's what people like about them. It's just, it's funny.
Yeah.
Just, and the day someone wears a sad globe to a competition will make my life. I would pay someone to do that just to watch what happens. It's so funny. Like,
yeah, I would also love to see it. Amazing. Well, Una, you are a bright light in this Irish dance world. Keep creating all the content. I think it's safe to say you absolutely get your sense of humor from your dad.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. He was obsessed with Photoshopping stuff. So yes.
Yeah. I love it. Keep it up. Love the stats. Love the content. Keep putting those messages for dancers out into the world because I'm sure you have positively impacted so many people already. And I hope everyone who is going to Western region, Southern region, maybe Mid-Atlantic region gets to catch up with you. And thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to seeing our episode come out.
Yeah, yeah. I hope, you know, anyone who wants to get to know the woman behind the sad globe has learned a little bit about you and kind of
yes
where all this creativity and wisdom comes from.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.